Good afternoon, everyone. Do appreciate the special music, and it was special to watch the ceremony of the blessing in the little children. Seems like just yesterday that our children were blessed. Kind of ties in with what I want to talk about today. We did have an enjoyable feast, and I hope that most everyone has. And we can sometimes, at least myself, you sometimes get in a position where you might want to start complaining about, well, this wasn't exactly right at the feast, or I didn't get to do this. But after hearing the story, you know, especially of Angie getting to go to the feast, not knowing if she was even going to get to go through, and what all she went through, kind of set your perspective in the right direction. You know, we sometimes lose track of why we are at the feast. We did have a very enjoyable feast in Gatlinburg. We shared with Kirk and Ronnie, shared a nice cabin, spent a lot of time with them. Our kids got to play together. And we did have an enjoyable feast. You know, we heard some good messages, gave us some things to work on throughout the rest of the year. And it was neat to see the slides from Africa. You know, because several years ago we went to Barbados for the feast. You know, and it was a small feast site. And I would have to say probably, my wife and I agree, that was probably the best feast we've ever had. And not because just that it was in Barbados and a nice climate, but it was a smaller atmosphere. You got to really know the brethren and to see the excitement of those brethren. You know, they were really excited. You know, and sometimes for us when we go to places, especially like Gatlinburg, we might lose our perspective of why we're there. You know, we might want to see how many things we can do and all the activities we can do. But anyway, that was one of our best feasts ever. And the reason is because of the excitement of the brethren. And we spent a lot of time with them. And it was a close-knit group. You know, it was a family group. You know, and that's what the feast pictures for us, is God's family. And that's the topic I want to talk about today, is the topic of families. You know, there's a lot of things in this world today. I've seen several stories this week, you know, that just really bother you as a Christian, really make you sick as to what this society views as a family structure. You know, we were watching a SAFE program the other night on the Food Channel. And they have to bring in this idea of homosexuality in the family. You know, and this, just talking about it like it was totally acceptable. You know, I won't say much more about it, but we thought we could watch that show with our kids, and all of a sudden this topic comes up, and it's like, you know, I can't watch anything. Can't watch anything on TV anymore. But the family, in this society, the family is in trouble. You know, the American family faces a lot of problems. You know, it seems to be an indication that this family structure is breaking down. You know, and as I mentioned, they define the family structure differently. You know, things are becoming much more tolerant. It's what people will allow and accept. And, you know, it's sickening. You know, and things are going to get a whole lot worse. You know, God created the family structure. You know, if you want to turn to John chapter 1, verse 10, I'll just hit a few verses to get started off here about the family structure. In verse 11, this will tie in a little bit more as we go on. Verse 11 of John chapter 1 says, "He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name." And we have an opportunity to be in God's family, to be a child of God, you know, to be in his family structure. And in Psalm chapter 127, verse 1, you don't have to turn there, but "Unless the Lord shall build a house, they labor in vain." You know, and the point that I want to get from this is that We must have God's help and His guidance in our families if we're going to be successful. And we have to have God's help. We have to include Him in our family if we are going to be successful. You know, children need the involvement of their parents in their lives. And they need especially the involvement of the fathers. You know, and as I mentioned, families face more and more challenges today. And some things are beyond our control. Sometimes, you know, a spouse may pass away. Or sometimes there's differences that just can't be reconciled. You know, sometimes marriages don't last. You know, but there's a book, and I've mentioned this before. It's entitled The Most Important Place on Earth. And it's written about the Christian family and how to build and develop a Christian family. And that's what I want to focus on throughout the rest of this sermon, is our families, our Christian families. I want to look at some points that we can apply that will help us make a stronger Christian family. And in doing so, you could probably see some parallels that will help us in our spiritual lives as well, preparing to be in God's family. You know, our homes should be a place that we can feel safe in. You know, that we can be a place of safety for us. You know, it should be a refuge for us and for our children. You know, it's a place that we can go, we can feel safe, we can feel comfortable and secure. Our children can know that they're safe and secure. You know, we're at peace when we're in our homes. You know, we feel a sense of peace. You know, and I enjoy being at home more than I used to. You know, I like to just be at home, be with the family, whether it's doing things with the kids, which I don't do enough of that. That's one of the things I learned from this sermon, and this sermon is directed more at me than anybody else. You know, I need to work on all these points, you know, especially with my children. But I enjoy being at home with the family, with my wife and children, doing things together. You know, and even going to the feast or going, you know, on a simple little trip somewhere, going together, and some of the things that we do may not be very exciting to most people, but just to do them together as a family, you know, it means a whole lot more to me now than it used to. And so the first step, you know, in this Christian home or Christian family, I've got a total of five areas or five elements. The first one is that our Christian family, our Christian home, is different. It should be different. And it's okay to be different. And it's important to be different for us. You know, we should stand out. A Christian home or Christian family should stand out in the right ways. You know, stand out in the right ways. You know, it's okay to be different. So how do we make our homes different than all of those around us? You know, we have some points in the Bible on how we can do that, some things we can do, some important instructions that we can use on how to build our home, our family. You know, when I used to build houses, and a lot of the neighborhoods that we were working in, especially a lot of the big developments, you know, all the homes look alike. You can call them a cookie-cutter neighborhood or, you know, whatever term you want to use, but you go into these places and they all look alike. You know, it's easier to build them that way, I guess. And everything looks the same. You know, but that's not what we're after. I mean, our physical house on the outside may look like everyone else's, but we want to work and make sure that what's inside, our family structure, stands out in the right way, that we're different. You know, somebody sees our family, looks at us, they know there's something special about us, something different. And again, we want that to be in a good way, you know, in a positive way. You know, not blend in with everybody and everything around us. We can turn to Matthew chapter 7. couple of verses that we're all familiar with. In fact, most of the verses that we'll look at today, you know, are very familiar to us, but we can look at them again anyway. Matthew chapter 7, as far as how we can start by building our house. In verse 24, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken to him a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. And what we're reading about here is having the right foundation. And as we all know, for us, that foundation is God and Jesus Christ. You know, build our families on that foundation. You know, God's way of life. You know, it's important that we build our homes and families on this solid foundation. As you read on down through the other verses there, the house that's not on a solid foundation will easily fall when there are troubled times that come. So we want to build on a solid foundation, and we know that that's God and it's His Word. If we build our homes on God's way of life, you know, we are putting them, building them on that solid foundation. You know, instead of on sand, on a weak foundation. And in doing this, we will be prepared. You know, when those difficult times come, you know, we'll be prepared for those times of trouble. And we can weather those storms of adversity. And when people walk into our homes, when they see us and our families, as I mentioned, they should immediately know and recognize that there's something different about this family, you know, and not like the Adams family, but they should look at us and see there's something different about this family. You know, something that I would like to have, something that I would like to know more about. You know, when they see us, you know, with our families, you know, in public or at church, at school, you should know that something's different, and in a good way, in a positive way. You know, not that we're a bunch of kooks or weirdos. And they tell by our actions and our conduct, you know, that we have a higher standard that we're trying to adhere to. You know, there's something more to us, and that we have a good, solid foundation. And Matthew chapter 5, turn back there. Again, along this point, this idea of being different, not blending in with everyone else. Matthew chapter 5. Verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Well, there again, people see us. They recognize there's something different about this family, which would be a shining example, you know, to the people that we come in contact with. So the second element. First of all, we get started off with the right foundation. Second element is that a Christian home should smell of God. And it may sound a little bit funny, but a Christian home smells of God. You know, our home or our family should have that aroma, that aura, that God dwells there. And that God is very much a part of this family and this home. So how do we make sure that the smell of God, or that God is in our home, how do we make sure that it smells that way? You know, one way is for us not to be the one that's at home on a regular basis. We should let God be in charge. Let God take over for us, not get in the way. You know, that we need to get out of the way and let God direct us and live in our lives. You know, I've mentioned this before, but I remember when I was a small boy, my dad would drop me off at school. He was a school teacher, and he'd drop me off at school in the morning. Of course, he'd give me a hug, bye for the day or whatever. And he always wore cologne, you know. And I would have some of that cologne on my clothes after he hugged me. And I could smell that for it may last for an hour or two, but I could smell that on there, and it reminded me of my father. Gave me some comfort. Of course, my mom always got on to him for wearing cologne to school, wearing it to work. She wanted him to wear it more when he was going with her. But anyway, he always put on cologne, and it had a certain smell. And that was a comforting smell to me. And I would get some of it on me, and it would help me to have comfort in some cases, And you can tell a lot about people by the smell that's on them. What I mean by that, if you walk up to an individual if they smoke, you're going to be able to tell when you walk up to them that you can smell it on them, you can smell it on their clothes, or someone that's been drinking. If you walk up to them, that's pretty obvious. You can smell that coming from them. Or if they've been outside working in the fresh air, that's a clean smell that someone gets on their clothes. Or if laundry's been hung out to dry outside, that's a very pleasant smell. So there's good smells and there's bad smells. We want to make sure that with our homes and with our families, we have a good smell. And that smell is that God is involved in that family. We can do that. One way is, when we're coming to services, we're assembling together. We help each other and we grow. To hear God's word and to encourage each other. We can ensure that our home smells of God by making sure that we don't shut Him out of our home. We stay in touch with God, stay close to Him through our prayer and Bible study. Keep God involved. Make sure that He's the center of our home. And we see, unfortunately, in today's society that a lot of people want to shut God out of their homes, out of their, out of the schools, just shut God out altogether. And we want to make sure that we don't do that. We want to keep God involved, keep Him at the center of our homes and our families. And then our homes will have that sweet-smelling aroma. People will be able to know that God is a part of this family. God is involved with this family. Element number 3. So we've established we need a good foundation. We need to make sure God's involved in the family. The third element is the people in the family. A Christian home should be a place where dad and mom are respected. And loved. It's a place where the children are nurtured. We'll look first at the father aspect of the family. The father needs to be respected in the family. Father is the head of the family. And I've talked to some of the older gentlemen here before, and we've talked about some of the responsibilities that the fathers have in the family. And sometimes it's scary to think of the responsibility that the fathers have. We do have a great responsibility for our families, for our wives and our children. We shouldn't take that lightly. But in the fathers need to be respected in the family. He needs respect from his wife and his children. And again, they have a tremendous responsibility of leading the family, taking care of the family, providing for the family, teaching the family. And dads need to be there for their children. Children need to know that their fathers are there for them. It's very important that they know that their father is there for them. There's this amusing little story about a painter. This man was the world's greatest painter. And he got a phone call one day from the richest man in the world. He wanted him to paint his house. And he told him that the cost to paint this house is no object. Just paint it and we'll settle up when you're done. So he jotted the address down and he drove to the house. And this was huge. Just unbelievable how big the house was. So the painter got to work, scraping off the old paint. It took him 15 years to get rid of all the paint on this house. Then it took him 10 years to put the primer back on the house. And another 10 years to put the final coat of paint on the house. So that's 35 years, all in all. And the painter was 80 years old when he finished. And on the day he finished, the rich man called him and said he was coming over to settle up for the job. When the rich man drove up to the house, the painter was waiting on the porch. With a smile on his face, he was proud of the work he'd done, the best work he's ever done. Rich man got out of the car, and he just shook his head. He told the painter, "You've painted the wrong house." So we know that story's not true. But the lesson from that, you know, as a father, as fathers, are we painting the wrong house? You know, are we spending our time and all of our attention on something that doesn't matter? You know, there seems to be, from what you look in the American society, the family today, that is a big problem facing families. You know, the father's got to be the leader of the family, both physically and spiritually. And for us, the most important duty for us as a father is our spiritual leadership that we provide for our families. Very important issue. And again, it's scary if you really think about it. You know, the father is responsible for leading his family, you know, just as God leads his spiritual family. You know, we as fathers have to take seriously our role as the leader of our family. When I'm guilty in this area, I realize I have a lot of work to do. But I hope it's not too late yet. When I pray that God gives me the guidance and wisdom, to lead my family. And to lead them in a way that's pleasing to Him. So how do we fulfill this leadership role that God has put before us as fathers? Turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 for some instructions in this area. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. Says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart." So this is the first of the commandments, first of the greatest. "You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on your doorpost of your house and on your gates." Instructions to us there is, God's way should be overflowing in our homes. And us as the fathers, also the mothers, but we should be teaching our children, talking about God's way. That should be the center of our lives. And I have to confess, sometimes it's not. And it's easy to get in that situation, with all the things we have going on. It's easy to get in that trap. But we should take every opportunity to teach our children. Spend time with them, talking about God and His creation. Talking about God and His awesome plan. It's easy a lot of times, especially when we're trying to sometimes juggle more than one job or all the things that we have going on, it's easier to eat dinner in front of the TV or to let the kids eat dinner and then the parents are doing something else. But everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And then it's time for bed and then you go to bed and you get up and do it again. And the process repeats itself. But we have to, as fathers, this is something that, after the feast this year, I realized I have lots of areas to work on, but I want to try to put a checklist out. I want to improve in all these certain areas, and this is one of them for me. Is to do a better job of, working and teaching my children. in talking about God's way and make it more a part of our life, probably going to mean we have to turn the TV off. Well, I know it's going to mean we have to turn the TV off. You know, turn the computers off. But it's important that we as fathers are there for our families, especially for our children. You know, and again, I want to change. I've got a lot of work to do in that area. I want to spend more time with my family, especially with my children, you know, doing things with them. You know, we need to be there for our children. And the children need to know that we are there for them, that we'll always be there for them. You know, that discussion's come up some in our family. You know, whatever the situation is, you know, and I try to tell my children, you know, said I will always be here for you. You know, I'll never leave you. Got a story. It's in the Chicken Soup for the Parent's Soul. If you've got that and would like to read it, I'm just going to read the couple of highlights out of it. But it's entitled Daddy's Day. And the gist of this whole story is that they're having Daddy's Day at school, and all the fathers are coming to the classroom, and all the children are bringing their daddies, and they're going to introduce them, talk about them. You know, my daddy does this, and so on and so forth. But one little girl, apparently her dad had died, and she wasn't going to be able to have her daddy at school, and her mom tried to get her not to go. Said, it'll be easier if you just stay home today. You won't have to go through that. She said, no, I'm going. She was excited. She goes to school. You know, and of course, as they're going through their program, some of the other kids are making ugly comments about, well, where's her daddy at? Or she doesn't have a daddy. And some of the dads, well, it looks like another deadbeat dad didn't show up today. And all these ugly comments. But the little girl stayed straight, stayed strong, didn't let it bother. And then it finally came her time to talk about her daddy. And all these words did not offend her. As she smiled at her friends, she looked back at her teacher who told her to begin. And out from the mouth of a child came words incredibly unique. Said, my daddy couldn't be here because he lives so far away. But I know he wishes he could be with me on this day. And though you cannot meet him, I wanted you to know all about my daddy and how much he loves me so. He loved to tell me stories. He taught me to ride my bike. He surprised me with pink roses and taught me to fly a kite. We used to share fudge sundaes and ice cream in a cone. And though you cannot see him, I'm not standing all alone. Because my daddy's always with me, even though we are apart. I know because he told me. He'll forever be here. And as she went on to talk about him, you know, the other dads and children started to drop their heads, and you know, they all closed their eyes, and she said, when I close my eyes, I can still see my daddy standing here. And then toward the end of her time to speak, you know, she said, I know you're with me, Daddy. As her dad had always told her that he would never leave her. So that little girl knew, you know, that her daddy would always be there for her, that he loved her. You know, we have to make sure that our children know that we'll always be there for them. You know, we've had a time or two when, you know, one of my children's had a bad dream, and they wake up and they come crying and said, Daddy, I dreamed you left me. And so I, you know, wanted to make sure that they knew that I would never do that. So all you can do at that time is, you know, hug them and hold them. But it's important that our children know that we will always be there for them. You know, very important role that the father plays, that the children know that they can always count on him. And we can learn that same lesson as well, that we know that we can always count on God as our Father. You know, as he said, he will never leave us nor forsake us. So the second element of this family is the mothers. You know, the moms need to be loved. Ephesians chapter 5. You know, the mothers and the moms also have a very difficult role in the families. And sometimes, you know, someone may look at a stay-at-home mom as someone that lays on the couch and eats bonbons and watches TV all day. But that's the furthest thing from the truth. You know, a stay-at-home mom works really, really hard. You know, she has several jobs that she has to do. You know, chauffeur, cook, housekeeper. And the list goes on and on and on. You know, a stay-at-home mom really, really works hard, does a lot for her family. And the mothers need to be loved. You know, and it's important, too, that the children have to love their mothers as well, but they need to see that the fathers love the mothers. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28, "So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does his church." So we see there, nourish and cherish. You know, nourish means to feed, something that's done multiple times a day. You know, and a husband needs to love and nourish his wife. Cherish is what a mother bird would do to her children, watching over her nest. She guards them, protects them from danger, and keeps them warm. You know, husbands need to cherish their wives. You know, husbands feed, take care of the wives, and protect them. Make them feel secure and valued. As we mentioned, they have a very difficult job in the home. Sometimes they get overlooked for that. Don't get the appreciation that they need and deserve. And again, I'm guilty of that. You know, dads need to help out. Fathers need to help out. You know, taking care and loving, nourishing, cherishing the mom. And the children need to see that. You know, I know as I was growing up, my parents had a good relationship, and they still do. You know, my mom, we'd be after dinner and the evening before bed, be watching TV or something. Mom was set in Dad's lap in the recliner. You know, and maybe the first few times my sister and I were like, "Well, what in the world is that? You know, what are you doing? There's another chair over here." But as we get older, we realize, you know, the importance of those kinds of moments and spending time together. You know, when you learn from it, and the children can see that. You know, I know it helped my sister and I. We knew we were in, you know, a good, strong family relationship. The third element, then, is the children in the home. You know, the children need to be nurtured as well and taken care of. Don't have to turn there, but in Psalm chapter 127, we read that the children are a heritage or a gift from God. You know, and if you want to define heritage or look it up in the concordance, it's something that's inherited. An inheritance, a possession, or an heirloom. You know, it's a gift, something that we should really value and really take care of. You know, again, God has given us as parents a tremendous responsibility and a tremendous blessing with our children. You know, and we therefore should value them, treat them, you know, as an heirloom, as a gift from God, and take care of them. Want to make sure that we do the best we can. You know, in training them in God's way. You don't have to turn there and write these down, but Proverbs 22 and verse 6. You know, we're encouraged to train up a child in the way. In 2 Timothy 3:15, doing so makes that child wise, you know, wise for salvation. And again, we as fathers and mothers have a tremendous responsibility to take care of our children, the gifts and blessings that God has given us, and to teach them His way. And element number four. And what sets a Christian home apart? You know, and again, God has given us a tremendous gift. Turn to Ephesians chapter 2 if you want to. And we can read Ephesians chapter 2 verse 8. It's for by grace you have been saved through faith, not of yourselves. It's a gift of God. You know, the opportunity we have, it is a gift. You know, that God has chosen to give us to save us from the punishment that we deserve. You know, and to give us the opportunity of being in His family. And there's some things that we can do then in our Christian homes as a practice to make sure that we have the right response to this gift that God has given us. These things help us better appreciate this grace and the gift that God has given us. First thing is practicing repentance and forgiveness. And we can do this in our physical homes and in our spiritual, our church home. You know, avoid the temptation to keep score in our homes. You know, when one of our family members does something wrong, you know, we don't want to keep score or list about all the things that they've done wrong. You don't be looking for what each other does wrong. You know, and parents also have to be quick to admit when they've done something wrong. It's important for the children to recognize that the parents are willing to admit when they're wrong. And it can be difficult sometimes, but you know, when we do say that we're sorry, I made a mistake, you know, please forgive me for that. It takes courage for us as parents to do. But children need to see that. They need to see that their parents can do that. They can admit when they're wrong, and they can ask for forgiveness. You know, how can we expect our children to do that if we're not willing to do it ourselves? Another thing we can do is to practice an attitude of gratitude. You know, being thankful for what we have. Being thankful and appreciative for what we do have and for what members of our family, the things that they have, and expressing thanks and appreciation lets them know that we care. And I know especially with younger children, sometimes they think it's not fair if one of their siblings gets something or gets to do this or gets this gift or treat and I didn't get one. And we try to teach them, you know, you should be happy for them, you know, that they got, you know, whatever it was. You know, be happy for them, rejoice with them. You know, and we're encouraged in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, I have to turn there, but we're encouraged to give thanks in everything. You know, to be thankful for what we have. You know, and if we can keep our mind and focus on what we read in Ephesians chapter 2, that what we have from God is a gift. You know, He didn't have to give it to us. We didn't earn it. We can't earn it. It's a gift. So that should help us to be more thankful for what we have and to be able to be happy when someone else gets something and when they're rejoicing and rejoice with them. Being thankful is important to us. It not only shows our appreciation for what we have, but it can encourage more kind acts as well. You know, we tend, sometimes as humans, we tend to want to do more for people, you know, if they're appreciative of what we've already done. You know, it's hard to have a kind gesture to someone that's kind of a sourpuss or, you know, not happy about anything. The third thing we can practice in our Christian homes as an expression of the gift, the grace that God has given us, is tenderness. You know, being tender-hearted. You know, it literally means to smear with inward affection. You know, treat other members of our family with tenderness. Let them know that we truly value them. You know, and it's a premeditated tenderness. I used to have a job where I had to travel a lot and I was away from my family. So you think about coming back to your family, and you've been away for several days or a couple of days, and you want to, you know, spend time with them, do certain things, do all these things, and you start thinking about being tender-hearted, showing affection to them, what you like to do, and it changes your whole outlook. You know, you're focusing more on that person, doing something nice for them, something that hopefully they will appreciate. Now, being tender with each other in our families lets each other know that we truly do love and value them as members of our family. And it creates a sense of security in them. Again, knowing that they are loved and valued so much. The fifth and final element in this development of our Christian homes and family is the power of words. You know, the words we use in our homes, or anywhere for that matter, are very powerful. And several verses in the Bible we can read about that. But they can be damaging. You know, when we spew words out of our mouths, you know, we're not firing blanks. You know, those are real bullets that we're firing out. We must treat the words that we use very valuable, very precious. Because, you know, they can have a tremendous impact on the recipient. You know, there was a story I'd read once before. I won't read it all again, but this boy's father had gone on a business trip, and his mother was home with him, and he was supposed to be doing his homework. And his mother didn't have a driver's license, so she couldn't drive. So he thought, well, I can sneak out and go do whatever I want to do. Mom's not going to find me. So a couple hours after, it was real quiet in the house, his mother went to see that he wasn't there. So she got somebody to drive her down to the skating rink where she thought he would be, and sure enough, he was there. She walked in with her overcoat and all that. You know, he spots his mom, and he looks at her, and she's got this look on her face. Not what he expected, but he walks over, and she says quickly to him, she says, "Come quickly, something terrible has happened." So he thinks, oh no, maybe my dad's died or one of my brothers or sisters. So he gets his things, they get in the car, they ride home without speaking a word. And he's wondering, you know, what in the world? You know, what happened? Who's hurt? What not? They get home, they go in the house, she takes her coat off, puts it away, sits down at the kitchen table across from him, and he's just waiting for bad news, and she looks him in the eye and says, "Something terrible has happened, son." She said, "My son has just lied to me." She wanted to make sure that he never forgot the impact of that. You know, and that was a true story, as far as I know. And he said when he was, you know, in his 40s, he never forgot that, the impact that had on his mother. And I have to say that few times when I was growing up, I did similar things. But the look I got from my mother was not that. You know, I was lucky I didn't get hit with a 2x4. You know, but the point was she was very disappointed in me and what I'd done. You know, and that's what had happened here. You know, this illustrates a profound lesson in the worth of the words that we use. You know, and how important they are and how important it is to be truthful. You know, it's what I've tried to teach my children, the importance of truth. You know, if there's ever a situation when, you know, especially as you get older, if you're, you know, accused of doing something or somebody says you've done something, if I can't trust you that what you tell me is truth, then, you know, I don't know if you're telling me the truth or not. But if I know that you are truthful and have always been truthful, then it's easier to stand behind you. So the very important that we are aware of the power of the words that we use. You know, we know also in James chapter 3 and verse 2 through 5. You don't have to turn there, but the power of the tongue. You know, it can be very damaging. Very damaging. So we should use words in our families and everywhere for that matter that will build up and encourage each other. Build up and encourage our family members. Because those words can have a tremendous effect. That effect can be positive, it can be negative, on the one that hears the words. And when sometimes we don't have all the circumstances of what has happened or why someone has made a certain choice or done a certain thing, and it's easy for us to just start spouting off about, you know, well, why they do that, they did this, you know, what are they thinking? You know, if we don't have all the information, you know, we may be missing some key information that would give us a totally different outlook. So the point is to choose our words carefully. Use words that build up and encourage each other. Make sure they have a positive impact on those that hear them. So we looked at these five elements of a Christian home today. And we can apply these elements in our physical homes, but we can also use them in preparing for our spiritual home. You know, a Christian home is different, and it's okay to be different. You know, we should have a higher standard of values than those around us. Make sure we have a good, solid foundation. Secondly, our home should smell like God lives there. It should smell of God. Make sure we don't shut God out of our homes. Let Him in so we can have that sweet-smelling aroma. And then there's the people in the Christian home. Each member is very important in that family, and they should be treated as such and be made to feel that they are a vital and valuable member of that family. And then the Christian home is set apart. You know, God has given us a tremendous gift, and we should reflect the appreciation for that gift in our homes. You know, one way is by being repentant and forgiving. And finally, the power of words. You know, choose our words carefully, because those words are very powerful. Make sure we use those words to build up and encourage each other, encourage the members of our family. So through the growth and development of our physical families and this Christian home that we're working on, which we might consider to be the most important place on earth, according to the book I mentioned, you know, we can be better prepared then to take our place in God's family, which is going to be the most important place in the universe for us.